We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, Light Years Podcast, we're back. Sam, how do I sound?
Wow, did you get a new mic?
After numerous complaints on the interwebs, I thought I'd become more professional now. So I bought this little snowball thing, and apparently I sound amazing. So we're ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, you sound significantly less fobby than normal. So very, very happy. We got a guest today, one of my favorite people to talk hoops with, Mo Dockhill, former Clippers film guy and film extraordinaire from thejumpball.net. Mo, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How about yourself?
Oh, good here. I'm just happy Andy kind of upgraded his situation into the 21st century. You really have no idea just how difficult it is. You know, for an Asian kid, he's just so bad at technology.
I want the unprofessional Andy back. Like I hope this doesn't give us a more tame Andy.
People do seem to love that version of me, I think. I think people don't like the buttoned up version. I got people at work like they just want me to be me, you know? Which I tell them that's probably not a great thing. Like I think Sam is similar. You probably don't want fully unfiltered versions of us. This like 50% filtered on the podcast is good. I think Twitter, it's about 75% filtered.
But once and that's you, once getting you, a little too close to the line there.
See, I'm okay with, I can do 100% unfiltered with both of you guys as long as I can exit and not have to deal with you and tell them to come back. Till I can opt out, you know, and then come back in.
Oh, man. So you're, by the way, my first question here is you are doing video highlights and cutting up clips of preseason games. So who made you do this? And no, I'm kidding, but what's going on? Give us the thought process behind, you know, kind of doing that.
I mean, we saw you cutting up clips of Clay setting screens, so immediately you moved to the top of the list as best film guys ever.
So what happened was I thought to myself, like, how can I get on Andy and Sam's good side? And let me just immediately start talking about Clay, the Warriors, and screens. No, I'm just kidding about that. I was doing this stuff at some point last year, and you know, I found that this is what most people tend to like. It's relatively easy for me. There's stuff I watch, and because of my video coordinator days, you can't turn off some of these things. And this is like, oh, that's something I would mark while watching a game that I'd want to either pull aside for myself or show one of the coaches later. So it's kind of that sort of mentality. And then just interesting things that fans may not notice, that I may not have noticed right away. Sometimes I go back and watch these clips again and see it the second time, like the Lakers jump, the playoff, the jump ball yesterday. You know, I didn't notice Pope set that screen until I flipped it on this morning. It was like, oh, that was an actual diagram play. So, you know, just trying to bring out interesting stuff and trying to just bring more intelligent conversation to Twitter and backing it up with what I know best, which is film.
By the way, is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope going to be the player that LeBron hates the most? I'm trying to decide because...
I don't know, man. I think Beasley could kind of contend for that.
I don't know if Beasley's going to play enough, but I think KCP's penciled into, you know, 25 minimum, 25
but he's
minutes
a clutch,
again.
But he's a clutch sports guy. Like, that's part of the family. I don't know how.
That's what I'm saying. LeBron. He can't have him traded, so it's going to make him super upset.
Well, he's a free agent next year, so at the worst case, he's just like, I just got to make it through this season.
I don't know. There's some shot selection issues there.
Oh, that's like half the team.
It's got to be some guy that'll never stop shooting on that team. I don't know, man. Like Kuzma seems like he'd be a good option, just as someone that's like, what's someone that's going to be kind of scared? You know what I mean? When they get the ball, actually, maybe it's Ingram. Actually, now that I think about it, somebody that can't really shoot.
Ingram so looked nice last night.
Ingram looked good yesterday. I was impressed with him yesterday. I thought there were some plays he made in traffic and things like that. A couple of stuff he did, playmaking and things. I thought he looked pretty good.
So did you watch the Warriors game? What did you think about that one?
I watched about the first half of the Warriors game. You know, look, there was some stuff in there where I was just like, damn it, like the defense already looks good. You know, the bench unit in one of the clips I showed, you know, Bell makes the proper rotation over, Iguodala cracks back, you know, and takes out the Bell's guy and stuff. And I was just kind of like, there were clips in there where I was like, you know, for a team that just won a championship, you know, they're right back in form defensively, knowing where to go, rotations. My favorite clip, which I didn't post because I didn't want to pick on him, but was when Wiggins tried to post up Clay, like,
enough other people posted that to
don't worry, yeah, it got posted many times.
it was out there enough, but like when I saw that, I just started laughing. Just like, this kid can't get a break. I like, what are you doing?
Do you actually feel sorry for him? Because he's like the epitome of everything I dislike. Like, a very gifted player who just has zero interest in like refining their talent to actually maximize itself.
He's the kind of player that would frustrate everybody and should frustrate us all, because it's all of us thinking the same. Like you just said, if I had those talents and that and those physical attributes, you know what I mean? Like, I'd be a world beater. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be all over the place and crushing people's souls and things like that. Like, we'd like to think that. But, you know, it's just kind of he's frustrating in that regard. He's very Tim Thomas-esque, you know. Rudy Gay comes to mind a lot of times, you know, and that kind of that's
Rudy Gay. Rudy at least competed pretty hard. Like, the decision making wasn't always great, still probably isn't great, but I always thought Rudy Gay played pretty hard, which I can't say about Wiggins.
Well, you know,
Wiggins is frustrating.
Yeah, the worst kind of, and Mo, when you were working, you know, for the Clippers, to me it feels like the worst kind of people are the people that make excuses for themselves. It just feels like Wiggins is a kind of guy behind the scenes to just be like, you know, like, I'm inefficient, but if I was in rhythm, I would have made that jumper. You know what I mean? Like, if I had gotten the ball here, I would have done that. If I touched the ball like 50 times a game, I'd be a much better scorer. You know, it just feels like he's that type of guy to just be like, you know what? Since I don't get these touches, that's fine that I miss them. But you guys don't know, like, if I'm in rhythm, I'm going to be cooking. Like, I feel like that's the worst type of people.
He for sure thought Jimmy Butler was holding him back, even though he had shown nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how Jimmy Butler could have held him back the year before Jimmy Butler got there. I mean, there were questions before that, right? And listen, just going back to last season when he gets the contract extension, when the owner says, I want to look him in the eye and make sure he promises that he's going to work hard before I hand over the largest amount of money he's going to make. Like, he's not going to get a contract that big again after this. But, you know, I just want to make sure he understands how important this is. I'm like, that should be a sign you shouldn't give him that contract.
Yeah, first off, owners not being able to stay out of their own way is just a personal favorite genre of NBA dysfunction. But yeah, I mean, I don't know why you'd go public with that. And then, like, but if you're having those thoughts, like, you had no reason to give it to him. He could have waited another summer. Like, the money doesn't even start till this year. They gave him the early extension for, I guess, peace of mind. But, like, did he really deserve that?
No. He's a restricted free agent. If he doesn't sign it, you control the situation. You probably get him at a discount. If you're like, screw it, go get an offer. Like, who would have, you know, maybe Brooklyn comes in with a crazy offer.
End up matching the same amount of money. Yeah,
right. You just match it, and then you just move on. It's just like, if you have these questions about any player, that's not something you go and you go sign, you know. And that's stuff that I just
at least Harry B worked hard, you know. For all the grief that Sam and I and the rest of the Warriors fans kind of made fun of him, at the same time it was like, the guy worked hard. He like tried to become a much better, and he did become a really like decent defender. He just like didn't have. Like, he was athletic and he could jump, but he didn't have like the fluidness and like the explosiveness that Wiggins has. Like, you watch Wiggins like once every like 15 games, he'll make a spin move, like 360 dunk in the middle of a freaking game, and you're like, oh my god, right? Like,
right?
Like, Harry B could never do something like that, and he could never move like that. But at least he tried. Like, Wiggins is just
like, and we were probably too hard on old Harry because like his just development curve was behind the rest of the team, and he can't help that. You know, like, they were all ready to compete, and he was like two to three years away from being that consistent contributor that they needed him to be.
Yeah, like Clay and Draymond, like they and Steph, like, they beat that curve, right? Is what you're talking about. Like, they blew by that. That's why nobody saw it coming.
Right, and you know, the thing is, it's harder in this situation, you know, like, we're seeing it play out with Patrick McCaw. And I know Sam was tweeting it, you know, when you're on a championship team, you know, you have to be up to par with these guys. You know, when you're going to try to compete for minutes with guys who are trying to be in the rotation come playoff time and potentially championship games, you know, it's hard to kind of develop in that environment. It's just a difficult situation, you know, and the further along the season goes, the fewer opportunities are coming your way because these games matter more and more. Yeah.
Like, there's you have 10 games to work your way through it because the standards are so much higher. You're not just going to get those like 35 minutes to kind of play your way through it because, well, there's like 8 better players on the team, so they'll go to a different option.
Right, and it's just a matter of there's not a lot of practice time during the season. There's not a lot of windows of opportunity, and you know, you got to prove yourself in games and, you know, situations where it's like, okay, you have a bad game, and this guy has a great game or is really stepping up. You're losing your minutes, and sometimes that's even just completely out of your control. Somebody else, you know, Quinn Cook, whatever, is killing all of a sudden. That's easy in your minutes. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a challenging environment. It's something we're going to see with, you know, this. We got a lot of young Lakers and a lot of veterans on the Lakers squad. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how they compete and how they push each other. I think it's a little bit easier for them in the sense of nobody's expecting them to go to the championship. Nobody's expecting the conference finals out of them. You know, I think, you know, best case scenario is a second round for them. So I think there's a little bit of an easier time for them to try to develop some of these younger guys. But in a situation with the Warriors, and like we're seeing again with McCaw, you can't really play it out as easily because it's just, you know, these games matter.
And I think we saw it last year. Remember when he asked to go down to the G League and he was just talking about how he just needed to play consistently and play free? like Andy was saying it last year. I mean, he looked like he was in his own head the whole time. But I do sympathize for him, because it's like there's Iguodala and there's Livingston. You know, like, you know exactly what you're getting out of them. Nick Young's a shooter off the bench. Obviously, you got Steph, KD, Clay. Like, he literally, he'd get like 4 to 5 minutes, and if he didn't play well, he might not see minutes again in the second half. And or even if he did, he'd see it in another 4 to 5 minute spurt. That's not really what a young raw player who kind of needs consistent run, that's not the best way for them to develop.
That's just not enough time to even get into the flow of the game. You know, it could go, you know, the first 2 or 3 minutes can go incredibly quick and you not even have noticed. You know, you may have only touched the ball twice. You may have just been defending on the weak side and no action really went your way or anything right. like that. Like, it could, there's so many things. It's like you 4 or 5 minute spurt. It's barely enough to work up a sweat. Now, granted, if I was doing it, I'd be passed out within a 30-second mark. But the challenge for that situation is, and now you're pressing more. Now you know you only got 4 or 5 minutes to prove something. So now you're putting more pressure on yourself in less time. And it's easy to get in your own head, like Andy was saying last year. Like, it's easy to kind of get in that situation and put that pressure on him. Like, I understand his want to go down to the G League and get some run for a while, because if he's not going to play there, game reps are the most important thing. Like, practice is great and all, but you're not going to get a game rep kind of speed. You're not going to go game speed during the season for the most part.
That's true. When you're watching film, I'm curious, what do you look for someone that, you know, may be a season where they're breaking out, right? And I want to kind of think of this from a Warriors aspect. Obviously, McCall would have been one of those guys, but like, if we're watching, you know, Jordan Bell or even Kevon Looney or maybe even someone like Quinn Cook, like, what are we watching for? What should we be watching for during games that tell us, hey, maybe they're going to have like a better season than what we expect?
Right. I think the first thing you kind of want to see really with every guy as each year goes on is kind of like an improvement in IQ. Now, some guys aren't just going to be massively smart or whatever, right? But you want to see them doing some of the little things that they didn't do last year or anticipating, like I was talking about with Jordan Bell rotating over and kind of being perfectly vertical, you know, on in the Minnesota game against Tolliver. You know, like, I don't know, I feel like last season he would have just gone over trying to get the block and probably would have got a foul.
Sprained his ankle.
Yeah, well, and that is true. You know, and I think you want to see those things. Offensively, you kind of want to see where they improved. Like, I had noticed in that game that Bell was kind of floating on the outside a bit more. I had caught him a couple of times here at UCLA over the summer, and he was working on his jumper and shooting a bit. You know, you just want to see them improve. You don't want them to just see the same thing over and over again. You want to sit there and go like, oh, they didn't do that last year, or they couldn't do that last year. That's great. You know, and you want to just kind of keep an eye on and see how it proves, but you want to kind of see, more importantly, how are they thinking the game, which is incredibly hard if you don't, you know, you can't get right into their brain. But you just kind of want to watch it, you know, and see, like, what are they anticipating? Are they in the right spots? Are they, you know, are they getting to their spots offensively and, you know, and getting to the right places? Are they setting good screens and all that stuff? You just kind of want to see what they didn't do last year and see what they picked up over the summer.
That was the thing that I noticed right away with Draymond on both sides of the ball, even when he shot, like, 8% from three in his rookie year. Like that, I was.
I think it was 11%. To be honest,
it was so bad. I remember, like, yo, is this guy gonna be a player? But then you watched him, like, you can even watch him play offense. The way he passed, the way he like made decisions,
like,
and
clearly had feel. Yeah,
he really did, right? And with Steph, you could tell he was a point guard the first year too. Like, the way he could pass, he could dribble, he can, you know, pick his spots. Clay, maybe not so much. I think Clay kind of grew into it. And now he's like a genius on defense, and offense is still a little wonky, but, you know, that's Clay. But like, for the Warriors, you just got a bunch of smart dudes. And I think Andre's probably the smartest guy on both sides on the floor, probably too smart for his own good. But like, that's a team that's full of high IQ guys. Like, that's why they work together. I guess that's like really hard though to watch for. Like, that's something, and I think Jordan Bell fits that mold. I think if Jordan Bell had maybe Kevon Looney's like patience, he'd be like a starting center and maybe a potential for an all-star. But that is a huge reason why the Warriors really are. It's kind of underrated because nobody really talks about that, because they just say like these guys are really talented, and part of that kind of includes intelligence, which, you know, nobody can gauge, I guess.
Yeah, they kind of,
it's just, oh, go ahead, Sam, sorry.
I was going to say one thing that the Warriors did that no one else was doing, they kind of did kind of prioritize smart guys who they saw a lot of film of in college. So they knew how to play. Like, I know Andy was saying this last night, but it's like you see that with Josh Hart with the Lakers. Like, that's a guy the Warriors would have loved to have. But it's like just continually going for these guys who maybe don't have the prototypical measurements in terms of athleticism testing or, you know, size or stuff like that. But like, there's just so much. It's just they know exactly how to play.
They just get to the right spots. It's one of those things. Like, IQ is such an important aspect. How many guys have we seen in the NBA that are super athletic and could do all the things we wanted to do, but just don't have that IQ or that actual, like, understanding? Like, that's the thing that makes Draymond so special. It's like Draymond's ability to diagnose a play and get to the right spots quicker than anybody else is amazing to me. You know, you mentioned Iguodala, Andy, and I mean, that stuff, that's like it's otherworldly, you know, like it's kind of freakish in that sense. And the thing about it with Iguodala too is like so many years of experience behind it, he just knows it, and it's something that kind of develops over time. You know, we mentioned Jordan Bell. There was stuff last year about, you know, the guys in the locker room questioning his work ethic, you know, and like, yo, you got to earn this, you know. And And there are some stuff you guys could probably speak to it more than me in that regards. But, you know, there's that thing in that locker room, too. It's like, this is how we work. This is how we prepare, you know. And if somebody's not going to be the participant and really kind of work together with the squad, they're not going to fit in that locker room. And that's the other thing you want to see with these young guys, is kind of working with these vets in terms of getting to the right spots and where to go.
So I have one final question. For you, when you watch the Warriors, when you're looking for things, who's the most, so one, who's the most fun for you to watch? And then two, who's the most, like, when you watch that you can cut film up and you can say, hey, this is how I can teach people, or this is like a really informative piece of basketball that I can show?
You saying what Warrior player or what?
Yeah, what Warrior player? Come on now, this is Light Years.
Yeah, I mean, we're on the Light Years pod. I just figured as much. You know, I think, you know, there's so much with all the guys. Like, it's almost, if I want to talk about movement, I'm going to watch Clay. You know, if I want to talk about IQ, I'm going to keep an eye on Draymond and where he's running around. If I want to talk about, and Sam and I kind of talked a little bit on Twitter about it the other day, you know, screen setting and things like that, you know, it's Steph and how Steph kind of gets to his spots and things like that. I mean, KD's KD, like he, you know, when he wants to take over, you can kind of just see it happen. So it's, really, in general, it's everybody. I like watching them all. It's just a question of what am I seeing? What are they doing that's different in this game versus, you know, other games that I watched or when I'm watching other teams? Like, that's what sets you guys apart, you know, is you have all these dudes that each do one or two things better than everybody else in the NBA. And then it's like, God, I can't remember the toy, but when you bring them all together, they form one giant monster. Oh,
Transformer.
Right?
Yeah.
Transformer. There
or
we go.
Power Ranger or something.
Power, yeah. Whatever. You know, like, they each got their special skills. And then when you bring them all together, it's, you know, a monster that can't be beat. And that's kind of who they are. And that's sort of, you know, the fun part of watching the Warriors. And it's going to be really exciting when Cousins is back and see how they use Cousins and in what ways and what pieces, you know, and what he can bring to the table, and how does Kerr kind of work that in?
All right, Mo,
we're
the
gonna
founder
have
of the jumpball.net. Sorry, Sam, what's up?
No, I was gonna say, one, Mo, we're definitely gonna have you on later in the season when we have some interesting film to break down, maybe against I don't know.
Let me
some games.
Let me ask you guys a quick question. Is there something wrong with me that I'm just cutting up preseason film left and right?
Keep cutting up Warrior film. Makes me happy.
Okay, so just worry.
Now, one thing I do appreciate is you get to the point when you cut it. There's a lot of people who cut up film where it's like an exercise in proving how much they know versus an exercise in actually demonstrating a point.
Oh, Sam's 1,000% correct. Oh my God, yes.
I have no interest in long videos.
Well, the thing is, there are people that just also post videos just to prove a point in terms of the point that they're already trying to make as well. So anyway, I appreciate it just because I'm not going to be watching the game, so I can just watch your highlights. so that works for me.
Yeah, Andy hasn't watched a Warriors game since 2014. I don't think our listeners know that. He literally just goes off of the tweets.
I just shoot tweets off.
When you guys won the championship this year, like the freeway was clogged because like a car was doing donuts or whatever on the freeway. I just automatically assume it's Andy whenever something like that breaks out by Oracle.
Cannot confirm. Possibility.
Hey Mo, thanks man. Thanks for coming on.
You guys, man. Thank you for having me.
All right, our first Light Years podcast mailbag.
We got some good questions this week.
Oh, yeah. By the way, shouts to people for oh my God, for the questions. I think this is the best we've ever had, right?
Like, it's up there. There was a lot of good ones. The hard part's going to be narrowing down which ones we choose because I think we got about 20 or so minutes. But anyway.
Yeah, let's go right in.
All right, we're going to start with friend of the show, Anthony Smith. At @ant_smith7, will KD, Clay, and Draymond all be Warriors on opening night 2019? We're already jumping a season.
Light years.
Andy, I'll let you go first.
Okay. Yes. I think that's the boring answer, but I think it's the answer that people obviously like. But I think KD signs a 5-year max. I think Clay staying. I think Draymond signs a max too. I think Lacob is going to put his money where his mouth is and pay a ridiculous tax bill for this team. I don't think there's necessarily going to be a Anthony Davis or Giannis or Embiid, one of these things. I don't think so. I think they're going to ride this thing out for as long as they can. And I will say, I do think they're going to be like, I think Steph and KD are going to be this great in their prime for at least like the next 4 to 5 years. So I don't think this is going to be a retooling. I do think KD is going to stay. And I think, and I think when that happens, people are going to be extra pissed.
Which is what we aim for. I have a couple thoughts piggybacking what you said. I feel so Steph's locked in already. So taking him off the table, I would be shocked if they lose Clay. For Clay to leave, they would have to bungle the negotiation because he's basically letting it be known, pay me fair market rate and I'm here. You know, Draymond isn't a free agent until 2020. And I don't think they're going to trade him this summer. Let's put it this way. If they trade him this summer, they got like Anthony Davis or, I don't know, something went really wrong, neither of which I think are likely scenarios. And actually, I don't think KD's signing a 5-year. I think he's going to sign another 1 year.
Okay, so how about this then? If he signs another 1 year, where does he sign after?
I don't know that he leaves. I just feel like he likes having that leverage and more power to him. He should, right? I really think only he and LeBron can do that and know they'll get a full max even if they get injured. Like everyone else has a little bit of a fear of if they get the full max, if they get an injury. But given the KD's size, like someone would still give him a 5-year or a 4-year super max if he, you know, God forbid, tore his knee or something. Because you're like, well, he's still going to be 7 foot and be able to shoot over everyone, right? So, I mean, they're the only players who, like James Harden can't take that risk. Steph can't take that risk. You know what I mean?
No, that's true.
So I think he's going to take it one more year. And if it goes well, then maybe he locks into a long term.
Okay, that's fair.
But I think generally, I don't think he knows. And I think the 1 year is like the best compromise. Like I don't want to leave, but obviously he has wandering eyes. So. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to lock in either.
All right. Next one. I have how many? This is perfect for you. How many games under 500? Oh, this is from at BallHardW8RS. I don't know what that is. But how many games under 500 would the Lakers have to be for ESPN to stop using their broadcast as a pro-LeBron Lakers propaganda campaign?
Okay. It is a preseason game, and they're clearly just trying to, like, drum up hype. Like, we all know the Lakers being good is good for the league. It's generally good when big market teams are good. It just is what it is, right? But last night's broadcast is pretty hilarious from that standpoint. Like, really trying to, like, it felt like you're watching one of those, like, an infomercial.
Yeah, I mean, that was, oh my, like, I watched the first half of the game, and I was reading your text, and I was like, oh my God, this is going to be nauseating. And then I get home, and literally, I walk through the door, and I hear Doris Burke going, oh my God! LeBron is got, and God bless Doris Burke. She's extremely smart and really good on the right. Really glad that she has one. But come on, man! Like, LeBron comes back in for the last, I think, like 6 minutes of the first half, and he's like, "Oh my God, LeBron's come back in." I'm like, "Okay, let's simmer this whole thing down a little bit." Like, I just wish there was more nuance in the conversation outside of just like, because I feel like people try to nuance the Warriors because it's like, well, we can't just slurp the Warriors all day because they're the greatest team ever. So they're like, they'll be like, you know, okay, so what are we going to do if Steph gets hurt? You know, how are they going to adjust with Cousins, right? There's none of that nuance when we talk about the Lakers. Like, it's like Rajon Rondo is going to be great as a leader. Kyle Kuzma is going to have a mentor. You know what I mean? All of these
Brandon
guys,
Ingram, superstar.
Yeah, so it's like all of these things where it's like, okay, so where is the actual analysis that we want to talk about? Because this team really isn't that good.
I think they're kind of, well, they're definitely interesting. Just because you're throwing LeBron into this mishmash of young players, some of whom are pretty promising, some I don't really know, and then you got like these wild card vets. Like it's gonna be interesting one way or another. How many losses for ESPN to stop?
Oh, that's good.
That's not gonna matter. If anything. If they start losing, it's gonna the noise is gonna get louder. It's gonna be like when the Heat started slowly, or when the Lakers had Dwight and Nash, and I mean that sort of stuff sells, right? So I just think it's here all year. It's gonna be the loudest storyline, and you know that's fine.
All right, you next.
All right, from Chris Francis at Franny Wagon. Light Years Podcast, what should the Warriors do to celebrate the last year in Oracle? I like this question.
Oh, that's a fantastic. Oh, do you want to go first? I can't. You go first. You go first. Do you have something?
I celebrate Oakland. Not much else to say. We both kind of dislike people who try to, you know, make this whole like Oakland versus San Francisco, real fans, non-real fans thing. I think it's kind of out of line and it's not accurate, but I get why people do it also. But that said, that, you know, they're leaving Oracle and it's going to be more corporate, and it was always going to be the case. And I just want people to realize if they stayed in Oracle, it would have just got more corporate as the Warriors continue to have
regardless.
Success. Yeah, I mean, that's just the nature of it. Once you become that successful, it's just never going to have the we believe feel, you know?
Yeah, I think so you make a great point. So I'm going to piggyback on that. I'm going to steal that and take it a step further. I think they're never going to do this, right? But I think that they need to, whoever is in charge, whoever is in charge there needs to kind of recognize that, hey, all the fans that made Oracle what it was, right, when we believe happened, can't afford the tickets now. There should be something that they should do. It may not be for an actual game, right, but to recognize that and allow everybody that can't afford those tickets during the regular season to come watch the game. I'm not saying like this should be a playoff game or this should be a game against the Lakers or something like that, right? Maybe, I don't know, maybe realistically, maybe it's like a game against the Magic or something. I don't know how they would do it. That's not my job. But I'm saying, like, for the Warriors to kind of give that recognition and say, hey, like you're right, like, it's going to be a worse crowd. It's going to be a Patagonia jacket crowd. But we want those fans that were there, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago to still be able to enjoy that atmosphere in that arena one last time. So I think, I don't know how they're going to do it, but that would be awesome. Because then that shows awareness, and I think Lake Up does have awareness in terms of what's going on. So that would be pretty neat, but that might, I might just be getting a little bit too, you know, theoretical.
And then secondarily, I just think they need to continually honor the history when they move to the Chase Center. Like, they can't just act like, well, now we're here and, you know, that stuff never happened, right? So it's a continual thing. It's, you know, you see it with the Raiders now, with them, like, trying to essentially erase memories. Huh. Like, you don't want to be that. Don't be that. You know what I'm saying? Embrace your history. Hopefully the Warriors have a bunch of ex-players, you know, who had moments here, you know, like Run TMC, We Believe. Honestly, not much memorable in between those two. just stuff like that. And that's it. I don't know what else they can really do. It's going to be weird, you know. I was just by Chase Center a couple days ago, and it's almost done. It's getting there, you know. Like, structurally, it's pretty much, they have the topping out. It's starting to get there, and it's exciting. But it's, you know, I'm sure I'm going to have that nostalgic feel at the end of the season when, like, they play their last game at Oracle. Yeah, I don't know, but that's just kind of how it goes, right?
Yeah, it's going to be bittersweet, but I also am not the guy to, you know, I'm not the guy to say, like, hey, you know, because I'm not from that part, and I went to a bunch of games when I was little, but, you know, I don't feel that same way as people who do. So
grew up in San Francisco and you were still a Warriors fan. I didn't know that. I thought only tech bros lived in the city.
Hey, you know who's really good at honoring players? The SF Giants are really good at that. They're really good at
They're, like, really good at doing that to distract from the fact that they're really bad at putting
things together. Oh, 100% true. they're really good at living in the... Dude, like, even when the Giants were good, they had old players, like, right? So, like, they really rely on the past. But the thing is, they're good at that, and the fan base, I mean, we eat that up, right? Like, even when David Lee came back and, like, they put him on the screen, my God, like, the standing ovation. And in my head, I'm like, who the hell cares? It's David Lee. He was never good, and but people love it. Like, fans love that thing. And, like, another one for me,
there's
is
a specific subset of fans who just adore David Lee.
But look at Monte. You know what I mean? Like, people love Monte. For me personally, like, I couldn't care less. Like, Monte was great, but, like, he was a chucker. He didn't play defense, and he wasn't really that fun to watch for me personally. But, like, if the Warriors brought him back and, like, showed him on the Jumbotron or like whatever, like,
we need the Anderson Varejao thank you game.
All right.
So I'll move to the next question.
let's slow it down.
From Anthony Canton, friend of the pod, good dude.
Yeah.
Will the games against Boston this season be each of your most intensely watched games? Any other matchups interest you particularly besides the obvious OKC Houston?
Oh, it's Boston. It's not even close. Yeah, it's not even close. Like, that's, I think that's the only team that matters right now. I mean, things could change as people always hedge, but it's not even close. There's no point answering the question. It's Boston. Like, the way that they can match up, if Gordon Hayward's good, if Tatum's good, we're going to talk about this. Like, we actually talk about this every day.
Yeah.
But we are going to talk about this every day this season. And it's if Jason Tatum makes a leap and Jaylen Brown becomes, like, you know, a better version of Harrison Barnes or a homeless version or a poor man's version of Iguodala.
Or just a better version of what he was last year.
Like, Boston's the team. Like, they've got the point guard, they've got the defense, they've got the wings, and they've got the coaching. Like, that's the only team that should matter for the Warriors, because nobody else in the West has a chance.
So I look at it this way. Boston will have me most interested from like a basketball X's and O's standpoint. Like, I'm just very excited to see the Warriors match up against them. But then Lakers will by far be the most interesting from just kind of like a drama fan base perspective, just because LA and the Bay is a rivalry in every sport, right? And we all have a bunch of Laker friends, just by nature of like people we knew who grew up in LA or stuff like that. Like, it's just, it's so ingrained in the culture, you know. Like, you have the Giants and the Dodgers here, or what's the other one I'm thinking of? But yeah, I mean, it's the NorCal SoCal rivalry is a real thing. So I think that'll be a lot of fun, but for different reasons. Boston will have me like texting Mo, like asking him to break down film, you know, like nerding out in that way.
Yeah, the Boston, that's I actually can't wait now that the season is getting closer. It's going to be
we got any sleeper teams? There's always interesting ones, but I'm trying to think of like a sleeper one that I think could potentially make like the big step.
So I'm going to get really back to my blogger days. I don't think this is a sleeper team, but this is a team that if like back when I used to watch like every single game, and I like come back from the gym or come back from college school and watch a 4:30 game, the Indiana Pacers are probably going to be the team that I would love to watch. If Miles Turner takes a leap, Victor Oladipo keeps getting better after leaving Russell Westbrook, and Sabonis is able to like run that pick and pop and pick and roll with Turner, like that's a team that's going to make noise in the East, because the East is up for grabs. Like, I don't – like, Giannis is great, but that team is garbage.
I was going to say Milwaukee, because I'm just excited. Yeah. I'm just excited to see Giannis, because we both agree Giannis is in that, like, Steph category of, like, an insanely coachable star who needs, like, the right coach to, like – unlock some of the things like he doesn't even know he's capable of.
And Budenholzer is a good coach.
Yeah, so I'm just excited to see what they can do with that. Like, I don't know that they have enough. Like, maybe Budenholzer can resurrect Eric Bledsoe's career. I don't know. Not super optimistic on that. And then maybe Middleton gets a little better. But, like, you know, ultimately, there's still some holes there. But I'm just excited to see a creative coach kind of take Giannis to the next level and see what that could be. Because they're like 44 win, like mediocre East thing they've done the last couple of years. It was just kind of, it's just insanely maddening given how talented he is.
Yeah. Yeah. And that team around him is not great. Actually, I have one. The Pelicans are going to be fun. The Nuggets, obviously, but the Pelicans have that star. I don't think that the Nuggets have that like star like that wins you a postseason series. So I think that
Jokic top five RPM.
the pimp is the new one, bro. I think Anthony Davis, Mirotić, and Randall are going to be fun as a front court rotation. I think they're hoping like Elfrid Payton's like a poor man's version of Rondo. I don't know what that means, but they're hoping for that. I'm going to assume so. AD's always
they would be my number one. Like, I don't know how they get Jimmy Butler, but I would love him to end up there.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Like, but it's not going to happen. They don't really like. They'd have to trade Jrue Holiday to get him, in which case. Then, you know, it's kind of a lateral move. Like, they got, like, subtly better. Like, what I would want to see is, like, Drew, Jimmy, and AD together.
That's true. Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah, that'd be great. You know what is not going to be a fun watch is Portland. But, hey, let's because there's breaking news on this, so I'm going to take this question. From Ada, ADA. You're going to like this one. ADA, KANYEA. What are your thoughts on the Pat Costale, mate? So, it's not really breaking, but Shams just tweeted and said, hey, he's not going to accept his qualifying offer or whatever. So he's going to remain a restricted free agent, meaning the Warriors can still match whatever offer he gets. But looks like they're going to be waiting for, I guess, a while now. So what are your thoughts?
So we hit on it with Mo, but like I honestly think Pat's – I don't think enough people really – so Pat really – wants that big contract. He wants to prove he can be a legitimate player in this league. And I kind of feel for him because, like, it's not the easiest place to develop. I don't even think it's about the money, because another team's not offering him anything more than the Warriors. He just wants to go somewhere where he knows he's locked into 25 to 30 minutes a game. You know what I mean? So I don't know how he pulls it off because he's restricted and the Warriors are within their rights to just be like, we're going to match it regardless. But this is kind of why championship teams tend to have a bunch of vets, isn't it? Because this is a very tough situation for a guy like Pat McCaw to actually develop in.
Well, here's my thing, and I brought this question up because I didn't bring it up earlier, but my thing with McCaw is, to play devil's advocate, is you weren't good, right? So you weren't good, and a lot of it wasn't your fault because, you know, he got hurt very unfortunately several times, and before he I think sprained that ankle, it was a pretty bad sprain, he had a really good game, right? And so a lot of it wasn't his fault, but also he got hurt and he started the season terribly because he just wasn't confident. And now my pet peeve, as I was saying earlier, is that you can make up as many excuses as you want, but at the end of the day, like, the Warriors gave him opportunities and they put him into games where, you know, he was still able to shoot and he was still able to dribble, but he didn't do any of those things just because he's someone that's in his own head a lot. And if you're going to do that and you didn't play well, I don't know what you're really expecting, right? Because if he was someone that was maybe a high lottery pick, then it's like, okay, well, you kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. But at the end of the day, this guy was a second round pick for a reason. And I think a lot of the reason was, and it's kind of seeing it now, like, he can't really shoot. He's a little bit too skinny, so his defense is, potential is nice, but he doesn't really play that great of a defense. And there's really not much playmaking. So it's kind of, I get you want 25, 30 minutes, but who's going to give you that, right? And
I mean, there's about 15 teams in the league who would.
But then why doesn't he just sign something then already, right? Because then
that's the problem. I actually believe he's been offered contracts from maybe a Phoenix, a Sacramento, but he's not. But like, the minute they offer it, he accepts it, and the Warriors match it, he has to stay with the Warriors.
But it's, here's the thing too, it's not like this is a 5-year thing. Like, he's not signing a 5-year deal. This is 1 year. I mean, the second year is a team option, but even then, like, it's not like it's a death sentence here. Like, right? Like, even if he plays well on the Warriors, which, if you think you're able to play 25-30 minutes on the Suns, you definitely could play good minutes on the Warriors. Then why don't you go do that and then just leave, right? So you're kind of putting yourself behind the eight ball too, because when the Warriors do match it and you're like 2 weeks late to a training camp that you probably should be in right now, that doesn't help. So he's kind of like, I don't know what kind of game it's playing. I don't know who the agent is, but he's not really helping himself.
My read on it, and this is unsourced, or like, you know, I haven't like really talked with anyone. So my read on it is his agent's essentially trying to get the Warriors to rescind their matching rights. You know what I mean? That way, because like, he's not going to get more money, but the fear is like, okay, if Sacramento offered him $3.5 million, the Warriors would just be like, all right, we'll just match that. You know, like, it's not such a big difference that they're like, so what they need is the Warriors to give up their matching rights.
Well, why would the Warriors do that? Why would they pull, you know, do a show of good faith? Why would they do that, right? It's not like he's a veteran or whatever. I don't know. That veteran example doesn't work. But there's just no reason.
No, but I get what you're saying. Like, if Iguodala wanted out and there was no way around it, right, the Warriors would do it because it's like, you know, you've given us so much.
Right.
No, you're right. I mean, it's a gamble. But I am sympathetic to him from that standpoint. But then again, would anyone know who Pat McCaw was if he was drafted 37th to the Milwaukee Bucks and played 18 minutes a game for them and, like, you know, maybe gave him some good minutes, but like, nothing that stood out, right?
Yeah, because you look at the responses anytime the Warriors get someone in the second round, it's like, oh my God, it's a steal. Like, I mean, I remember when they got Jordan Bell, it was like Twitter was going nuts, and it wasn't just Warriors fans. People were just like, oh my God, like, this
well, actually, I
amazing.
Think Jordan Bell is an interesting comp because they're both the same type of pick, but they have completely different needs. Like, Jordan Bell has a lot of Draymond in him, in which, like, he's not getting inside his own head. If anything, he needs to think a little more sometimes, but, like, he's going to make his impact felt because that's just the kind of, like, he's an aggressive, just this is the type of player he is, right? Pat McCaw is the type of guy who needed development, needed grooming, right? He needed someone to kind of take him under his wing and like really trust him over a couple years, because he's not that guy. He's not Jordan Bell. He's not Draymond Green. Those guys are rare.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm tough. I guess I'm a little tougher on that. I don't know where it came from, but it just kind of annoys me. You know, it's like, dude, you're not a star. I get if you're Jimmy Butler and you want to leave, like, it makes sense, but it's like, Patrick McCall, come on. Anyway, I have one more. I don't know if you have another one, but I really enjoyed this one from Grant GEE Co, who DM'd me this. He DM'd me a couple questions, but I'm willing to do one. Where do you guys watch games, and do you watch them together? Sounds like you don't. So are you a bar type guy or a at your place screaming at your own TV type guy?
Sounds like you don't watch them together is actually, I don't know why that makes me laugh, because like we've watched a lot of games together.
That's true.
I want him to respond to you with like the reason he thinks we don't watch them together. Like, He's like picking up some like thing in our analysis where it's like, no, they're not on the same page. They don't watch it together. But I like that question. As I get older and grumpier, I watch less games out at bars. I do. It really depends on the mood. So my opinion is it's an 82 game season. I'm not going to watch every game like it's, like it's a Super Bowl or anything like that. So for a lot of games, it is fun to just like, you know, get together with your friends and go to a bar and watch it. And like, everyone's just kind of casually watching it. For big time games, I'll usually make it an event viewing of some sort. And I typically just try to have people over to my place or go to a friend's place, but somewhere where you can like the TV audio is still a predominant factor in it. I don't mind watching it with people. I don't need to be alone or anything. If anything, it's actually kind of fun to watch it with people. You don't want it to be like 10 to 15 people where you feel like you know, you can't even watch the game.
Yeah. People are just running around talking about their work. It's like, dude, shut the fuck up. I'm kind of the opposite. So I really enjoy watching games by myself. So when I first started like kind of writing and stuff like that, like I would watch games, like 2-3 games by myself, and like take like really nerdy, like take notes. And I'm sure you did that too, but like I love it. Like when I watch Warriors games now, like I'm not covering the Warriors this season, so I won't be at any home games, but like during road games and things like that, I would just really enjoy just sitting at home and just chilling and of course just tweeting random stuff during the games. It's just more fun. Like I kind of like no distractions, right? Like I don't have to answer any questions, right? I don't have to like worry about anything. The only time I would want to go to a bar, but I also don't even prefer going to a bar, just because it's like I don't want to deal with buying alcohol. So I just, what I really love, like during big games, like any game against OKC or whatever, is like just going to a buddy's house and just like, because then, and it's like your select few, so it's like a couple. Exactly. Like a couple guys that you know are just going to be like, all right, we're here. We're going to watch hoop. We're not fucking around with anything else. We're going to drink and we're just going to enjoy this game, right? Because
we'll order some food, but we're not going to be sitting here and talking about our TPS reports.
Yeah, like that. I cannot stand that. Like I remember, like I had a couple buddies where like they try to talk, and I would just be like, no. Like we're here to watch Steph. We're here to watch Draymond. Like, we are not here to talk. Like, I cannot stand that. So, like, that's kind of the reason, too. Like, sometimes I'm just like, well, I'd just rather watch it, like, just by myself. Because if I have to deal with, you know, other people talking about random stuff. But the thing, his part about us not watching it together, the fact that I don't cover home games anymore, it's going to be a lot more bar nights for me and Sam and Marina. So,
yeah, we're into that. Especially when they go on Eastern road trips. I'm going to be honest. I don't need to watch the Orlando Magic seriously. It's like, and it's, that's what it really comes down to. It's like, hey man, if I can use a Warrior game as an excuse to get a couple friends at a bar, why not? Right. It's a good, fun social time where you get to do something you enjoy.
Yeah.
All right, man, we'll get out of here. We'll record probably this time next week after Warriors play the Kings in preseason. The Kings apparently played Marvin Bagley at shooting guard. I'm not even kidding. They ran out Frank Mason, Bagley, Giles, Scal Labissier, and Willie Cauley-Stein all in the same lineup. Like, I really want Sacramento to be entertaining because I have some very good friends who like the Kings, but they just find ways to offend me.
I think people don't understand how much Sam cares about basketball, not just about the Warriors, but everyone else. Like, at the end of the pod, we're talking about the Kings and who they're playing. Just it's amazing. Actually, a couple of house cleaning things before we get out of here. We joined Blue Wire Podcast. Kevin Jones shouts. So we joined Fallon Smith and James Jones. James Jones, shout out San Jose State. I didn't go there, but he also played with the GOAT Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. So they've got a podcast that talk about Bay Area sports, keeping it 300. So people listen, subscribe, right? Get on that vibe, help us out. And also, of course, subscribe and rate our show 5 stars. If you don't like it, I don't care. Rate it anyway. 5 stars. And then, you know, that's it, man. That's all.
Basically, we're telling you to, you know, just do it in spite of us, if anything. Say we suck, but click 5.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you got a comment and want to make fun of us, please do. But 5 stars.
All right, later.